If somebody is just listening to this and said, look, you know, I've been convinced, Yuri, you're right, we should be doing more partnership-driven work. What should a business start to do to organize itself to have a mentality and a mindset that allows them to go, let's go and build a partnership capability that allows us to have a muscle that allows us to extend the offer to engage with other businesses to grow? What do you think? What would you be saying to those CEOs and the C-suite around the table if they've really traditionally just gone it alone?
So number one is we have this predisposition that whatever we feel is the right thing to do must be the right thing to do. And that's not the case. It's not what the SLT thinks around the boardroom table. What will your customers think of this? Is it a partnership that's genuine? Does it make sense? Will it create incremental value? Not because the CEO or the CMO thinks it's a cool thing to do. Many people have fallen into that trap. Like I'm no exception, but it's always about what does the customer want? Keeping the customer central at that focus of how will this partnership benefit them? That's always number one. If it feels fake, then it probably is. So just don't do it. And secondly, look outside of the immediate world that you're in. Back in the day, partnerships kind of, I guess they were built around your industry. So especially like I said, I've come from travel, so it made sense. If you're an airline, you partner with an accommodation provider or a car hire company and so forth. But partnerships now exist in, there are so many different ways that you can carve a partnership with two brands coming together that really made no sense at the time. Just some examples that I was thinking in advance of coming on here, what is it that I've loved recently? And, you know, Uber and Dettol, which I think was forced more so by COVID than anything else, but that made no sense, right? Like so relevant, but yet completely nonsensical if you just to float that on a whiteboard session. Or I think it was Binge and The Iconic, which was almost like a half joke where they developed a bunch of activewear to wear indoors when you're watching Binge. Like that is, they're fundamentally different things. One you do outside, one you do inside, and yet they made it work. So just be creative. Think about what can be fun. Yes, you want to obviously make money, profitability, share, price. We know all that. But if you have the ability to try and experiment, maybe it won't come off, but just look a bit further afield. They're absolutely the two things I would say. And we did touch the other stuff we touched on before is don't make assumptions. Listen first. Try and understand if the other party sees the same value in the partnership that you do and go from there. And it won't always work. And I've had obviously partnerships that have failed and that's fine, but just have a go and be creative. Don't be locked in your box that you're in from your day to day, which is hard to do because we get stuck in that box a lot. So spread your wings a bit and see what else is out there.
It's great advice. How is that different to a small company wanting to partner with a large one?
I don't think it's fundamentally different. When I was working in travel, again, to use an example, I worked for one of my very early jobs was, again, in the travel industry for a comparison website. Still around. It's called Hotels Combined. Again, some sure. listeners hopefully know it and use it. And it's long since been subsumed into the Booking.com Booking Holdings group many years ago. I think it was purchased in 2017 or 2018. It was a tiny business. We had about 40 people in Sydney, started by a couple of guys in the travel space that I've known for years. You know, I think I was the 10th or 12th employee. And after a couple of years, we got approached by Ryanair, an absolute behemoth of a business. Everyone knows it, of course, if you've ever flown in Europe, and even if you haven't. Notorious for squeezing every last dollar out of every deal, a CEO who's borderline insane and does all sorts of crazy things, but the brand is working, the business is growing. So we were tiny compared to them, obviously, but they found something that we could help them with. We could add value, and that is to create a platform for them to have a hotel or accommodation comparison engine. And we had great tech. And that's one of the things that a small company can do. And you see these acquisitions that are happening now through venture capital or others. People acquire knowledge and technology. And you could be a small company with 5 staff, 10 staff, but you've just landed on a wonderful piece of tech, a product or an innovation that bigger companies can't do as well because they take longer to move. They have other priorities. And sometimes being big is a blessing. Sometimes it's a curse because to pivot and to change direction for a large enterprise is quite difficult. There are boards, shareholders, etc. When you're small, you know, we have barely a dozen people at the moment, but obviously growing quickly. We are, we can innovate and come up with new things and new ideas and just try different stuff. And we have a great product. I believe in it. And we're partnering with some big names because ultimately we can be where their customers are and we can deliver them the outcomes they want. So if you can prove that you've got something that this large enterprise wants and needs, they will partner with you. It doesn't always have to be, you know, Nike and Coca-Cola. It can be somebody small creating something wonderful for somebody big and actually helping them to plug a gap that they would otherwise have taken years to do on their own. So being small in this case, I think, is a benefit rather than the opposite.
It certainly sounds like it. What do you think are the common mistakes that companies make when they enter into partnership?
I guess treating a partnership as like a one-off transaction, almost like a sales initiative, rather than looking at long-term value. We touched on this before. So some people are looking for, how can I get immediate sales uplift right now? How can I make most money now? And you might burn the other partner and they'll never want to work with you again.
Yeah.
Or they'll feel like they're being used. So a lot of that happens when you just want to create something quickly, whether it's for a campaign or for some other reason. But there's always value in thinking, where do I want this to be in 2 years or 5 years? And some of the best collaborations are built on that. People that created this partnership years ago are still going. So that's a common mistake, because you get blinded by what's possible immediately rather than knowing that this might take 6 months or 12 months to come to fruition and see the real results. So be mindful of that. Coming into a partnership negotiation or discussion having preconceived ideas about what is this deal, what do the people want, what value is it bringing. We come into every conversation with preconceived notions about who we're talking to, what we're talking about. It's human nature. Like, it's impossible. It's very, not impossible. It's difficult to change that. So if you come into any discussion set on a particular way of having it and the other person doesn't meet you on that same path, you're likely to have challenges, I would say. Yeah. And again, we did talk about this earlier, going into a partnership or going into a collaboration or any kind of a relationship because, you know, the boss said so. Like, go and partner with this person, or the CMO reckons, this is what I saw and I talked to the CMO of that other business. We should be working together. And the people below that are kind of wringing their hands going, but it doesn't really make sense. No, go make it happen. That obviously happens as well. And more often than not, it's likely to fall apart just because you're talking cross purposes. So it typically won't work.
I wonder, this is a big question, but I wonder your opinion on what is this future of partnerships that we're staring down the barrel of at the moment? You mentioned before that there is, you know, the future is one of partnership and growth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we sort of forecast into the next 10 or 20 years, what do you think we're walking into in terms of the future? Is it going to be a lot richer in terms of partnerships? Are we going to get smarter about how we do this? Obviously, technology is going to play a massive role. Like, how are you feeling about that?
I think that partnerships at their core will always be partnerships, coming together to try and make something valuable for everyone involved. That, I don't think that's going to change. It hasn't changed in, you know, as long as business has been around. But I definitely feel like there's going to be more collaborations or partnerships between brands that you wouldn't necessarily think make sense at the time. It's like something we touched on a little while ago. And brands will be looking further out from their industry. And new companies will come along, obviously. You know, you can think about, 12 years ago, Airbnb didn't even exist. And they're one of the best in terms of creating partnerships. Mm. Those things that you can do where they have bedrooms in football stadiums or sports grounds and all these really cool things. Like, they have their issues, don't get me wrong. They're well documented, of course, in online trade travel media. But they've come up with some incredible collaborations with celebrities and venues and so on. And again, you know, 15 years ago, this wasn't even a concept. It was three guys sleeping on someone's mattress.